Could you please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Tonight, our speaker is Bob D. from Temecula.
My name is Bob. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to welcome the new people. I'd like to thank Betsy for calling me 3 hours ago. No. She called my sponsor, and he suggested you call me because of how screwed up I am currently. Probably figured it would be a good thing for me to do now. No, I'm just kidding. Where do I begin? I'm originally from the East Coast, right outside of New York City. Grew up in a town called Westfield, New Jersey. Oh, and my name is Bob Denman. I say that and introduce myself because if there's ever a time when you're in Temecula, you may want to look me up. You can find me in the phone book. My sponsor pointed out that I can break my anonymity, and it's important for me to. As a matter of fact, he explained it's a violation of the traditions for me not to. So, actually, my sobriety date is June 10th, 1983. My home group is the Robber's Roost in Vista, California. And my sponsor is Kip C., Vista, California. Do you know I'm in the right place. All right, so I was, I'm from the East Coast, and I was from an alcoholic family with a lot of recovery. My dad was an Irish Catholic fireman, youngest of four boys. My father just passed away. It'll be 2 years ago this month with just shy of 40 years of sobriety. And what life was like prior to him getting sober, I was about 10 when he got sober. And before that, our home was just a, I just thought it was normal. You know, I have a lot of friends whose dads were alcoholic, and they always swore that they would never be like their dad. I never thought that for 1 minute. I looked at my dad, I want to be just like my dad. No one messed with my dad. My dad, from the way it seemed to me, had everything under control. He was a hard-working guy. And, you know, there was a few times where we had road rage in the car, and he'd just get out of that car, and he'd just take care of business, man. We had a... and I just, you know, looked at him, and I just thought that that's just the way a man's supposed to be. And he taught me all about... he taught me everything I had to unlearn in here. You know, he taught me about stuff like self-sufficiency. You don't need any help from anybody. You know, that kind of stuff. You know, pick yourself up from your own bootstraps. Don't cry. Be strong. You know, all that stuff that was just the way it was. You know, now they have don't keep score in Little League. Everyone gets a trophy. Don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. So it's going to be real interesting to see what we have here in the next, you know, 20 years. So, you know, I don't know. It was better. I mean, but, you know, to me, I had a great childhood, man. I mean, I, you know, ran around with my buddies. I played sports, and we played army in the woods, and we just, you know, I lived in just a suburban, you know, we're lower middle class. It, you know, I didn't know the difference. Not that there really is one. But there was, you know, my dad, I guess, would be more like a periodic. You know, there were just times where he would, you know, get physical with us. And, you know, that was just hard. There were plenty of times where, you know, we had like the above ground pool back there, and he built like a deck around it, and we'd always have like the picnics or the parties, and you know, my brother would come up and say, "Dad's getting in a fight," and be like, you know, and there he'd be with one of the neighbors because he, you know, said something or was hitting on my mom, you know, because he was a jealous guy or whatever. And to me, I just thought that was all normal, you know, my Uncle Joe drunk and falling into the rose bushes and, you know, just all that stuff. I didn't know any other way. And I played sports, like I said, and when I kind of went from 6th grade into 7th grade, you know, back there the school system, I don't know if it's this way now, but it was K through 6, then 7, 8, 9, then high school was 10, 11, 12. And when I hit 7th grade, you know, by now my dad's sober, and I have three older brothers, and it was, you know, the 60s, and all my older brothers are in recovery. I have one brother who died as a direct result of this disease. And, you know, at that time, our house was just, you know, it was just crisis living. You know, if it wasn't my brother John or my brother Kevin or my brother Tim or myself doing whatever it was, either fighting or crashing a car, there was always something. And we just thrived on crisis living. I had, you know, they had kind of set the stage for me going into school, and I had, you know, I was thinking about it today, because, you know, before you come up and you do this, you try and think, oh, God, you know, what am I going to say? And, you know, then I just invariably just sit there in that chair and say to God, you know, whatever it is that you want me to say, just have me say whatever it is that you want me to say. Because I'm not a circuit speaker. I don't have, like, this canned pitch. You know, there's probably a few things that I'll say that I've said before, but I just try and speak from my heart. And, you know, when I was on my way to go pick up Danny, I was thinking, you know, a lot of times I hear, you know, almost every speaker I hear, and he talks about not fitting in, you know, and I just didn't fit in, and I just feel like I didn't fit. And I was just thinking, you know, I had everything in the world going for me, and there are plenty of times today in recovery where I feel the same way. And it kind of came to me that it was self-centeredness. Whenever I'm like so into myself and I'm self-absorbed is when I seem to struggle the most in sobriety. And prior to, you know, taking my first drink, I think I was very self-absorbed as a kid. And I was very uncomfortable, just like I can get today in sobriety. And what happened for me is when I hooked up with this guy, he was Italian, his name was Armando Valles, and his dad made this wine. And we went to his house, and we drank that wine. And it took all that away, you know. It shut my head off, because I wasn't so consumed with myself. And it you know, like, you read the promises at the end of the meeting? Well, that's kind of like what alcohol did for me. It's kind of like the promises in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I didn't regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. You know, I comprehended the word serenity and I knew peace. And, you know, and on and on. And it was kind of like magic. I was like, yeah. You know, and I'm sure prior to that, I probably drank some of my dad's beers, you know, and went around and, you know, I remember drinking some sherry, this old bottle of sherry in the closet. I used to go in there and drink that. And prior to my first drink, I sniffed some gasoline after cutting the lawn and, you know, a little bit of glue and those type of things. You know, I kind of look at a can, and if it said, "Do not inhale," this must be good. And this stuff would work. It would shut my head off. But, you know, while I was busy, while I was active, while I was playing football, while I was playing baseball, while I was, you know, in fellowship, I wasn't so self-absorbed. And, you know, what happened to me is alcohol just took all my dreams. You know, I was at a service today. There's been a few people out in the valley who have passed away in the past couple of weeks here. Kind of like happens in threes and fours, and it's just kind of going on. There's been four people that I've known that have died. And, you know, this is a real serious thing. I mean, alcohol did its best to try and kill me before I got here, but it gets it's so cunning and baffling without it being in my body that I really, over the years, you have to learn how like this disease of mine really operates. You know, like I could walk up to the meeting, this could be my home group, and I could say hi to a few people, and who knows what they're going through, but you know, and they could be having a rough time, and maybe they don't say hi. And I go, oh, whatever. You know, great. This is just a great meeting, this AA thing. And then there I go. This group, I don't need this anyway. You know, I've been coming here making the coffee. No one really gives a crap. And then I get into that alcoholic thinking. And the next thing you know, I go to another meeting and the same thing happens. And, you know, I get into this self-centeredness and this self-centered thinking, which I believe to be, for me, you know, the largest defect of character that I have. So I didn't go out for football. I didn't go out for baseball. I remember all my friends from elementary school standing in the gym. I remember like it was yesterday. They were going like, what? And I said, no, I'm not doing that crap anymore, man. I'm tired of that crap. Because just like walking into a meeting where three people don't say hi, I was in that whole, my thought process was like, screw this. You know, the school thing. I'm just going to do what I want. No one really cares. Look what's going on in my home. You know, the other thing that kind of happened is, you know, I went into a kind of a different level to where I got out of the neighborhood that I was in. And some of these friends I was running around with, you know, their garages were bigger than the house that I lived in. And, you know, I all of a sudden I was like, man, I was going through the less than thing. And I felt like, you know, if we only had, if my dad was only, and you know, and that gets real difficult when you start to date, you know, and you roll in and your girlfriend's dad gives you the old, so where do you live? So what does your dad do? You know, and I just be like, oh, I know this guy just knows that we're just losers, man. You know, I had my one brother was addicted to heroin for years. You know, he went through the DARE program and there was a lot of shame, a lot of that you know, within me that, you know, we just weren't right. You know, we weren't. But it was something that was not to be talked about. It was something that once you left, it's almost like Vegas. You know, what you hear here stays here type thing, you know. And once I was out of that house, it was like, if anybody ever said anything against anyone in my family, forget it. It would, you know, I would go crazy. But you know, I mean, I had a lot of that going on, and I pretty much quit on what it is that I really wanted to pursue. You know, as a kid growing up, Yankee Stadium, you know, all the teams back there that I followed, all the dreams that I had, it just evaporated. I was at the service today, and, you know, just like the service 2 weeks ago I was at, they have, like, the video. And I could see the chronological order of this person's life. You know, and the guy today was 61 years old. And, you know, you see him, there he is as a kid, there he is getting married, there he is with his kid. You know, in every picture, there he is, he's got his kids, there he is, got the wife, there he is, smiling, there he is, he's got this great life. And then it just kind of, you know, got to the point to where, and then alcohol kind of became, you know, what it does. And, you know, it took this guy, he reached out, went to several rehabs, he just didn't get it. He wound up, you know, hemorrhaging his esophagus. They just couldn't stop it. And the guy wound up dying at the age of 61. But just to see, you know, and to hear everyone get up there and say, you know, wow, he's just a great guy. He's such my dad. You know, the sons get up there and they say, this is what my dad taught me. You know, the same things that my father taught me. You know, all about the sports. He, you know, taught me about tools. Taught me how to fix my car. Took the time with me. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, my father was able to, you know, get sober and to kind of break that chain in our family. But just to see the utter destruction of what this disease can do. You know, 2 weeks ago was a gal, she's 44. You know, and her daughters are up there, and it's the same thing. Every picture, there she is with her kids, and it's all this love, and all, you know, they talk about what a giving person this is, and how they made everybody laugh, and how they loved everyone else. And I just wonder, maybe they just couldn't love themselves. So it got to the point to where I get that, because I totally hated what I was. I hated everything about myself. But I don't want to get into that yet. I still got a few more years to go. But, you know, I got to ninth grade and I started to kind of make the turn, but I wound up having really bad grades, and the decision was made to, I repeated ninth grade. And it was really hard for me. You know, I remember it was like, I don't know how many people in here have gotten sober and had to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a very, very difficult thing. And if you haven't had to experience that, I pray that you never have to. But it reminded me of that. And I remember going back into ninth grade, but the blessing was the whole crowd that I was running with went on to high school, and a lot of them didn't, a lot of them died, a lot of them didn't even graduate because they got into heavier drugs. And what I did was I got back into sports, and I did really good that year and went into high school, and I did well academically. I didn't go back into sports in high school. And then the real trouble for me started when I got my driver's license. And I really like to drink and drive. I don't mean like just get hammered and just drive. I like to drive and have like a cold beer between my legs and, you know, like a six pack with my friends. And, you know, I had a convertible. I had this older car and it was, you know, it was kind of beat up. But man, the top went down, you know, and it ran. So you just put the top down and, you know, we did, you know, whatever was coming along. As far as, you know, enhancements. You know, I went through that whole stage in high school too. But, you know, as a result, I started to get in more trouble. And I kind of had this wild idea that, you know, with my dad being a fireman and my brothers already, you know, putting them through hell, a lot of police knew our situation in the family, that I would kind of, you know, they would give me breaks. And a lot of times they did. A lot of times, policeman pulled me over and drove me home. One situation, I had to go find the cop so he could tell me where my car was. I could not find that car. And I looked for it for 3-4 hours with my friend. We were driving down every street and I was saying, I know it's around here. I know it's around here. And I drove into the police station and I remember as soon as I opened the door, he was standing there and he said to me, "You don't even know where your car is, do you, man?" And they all laughed. And I laughed too. It was like, yeah, man, I don't even know where the car is. And they're like, so he drew me a map. It's right off of Sycamore Street here, man. I go, oh, all right. And that cop drove me home a few times. Haven't found it necessary up till today to have a DUI. And I wound up getting involved in the restaurant business. And I wound up, by the time I was 18, they had rolled the age back from 21 to 18 because so many kids were driving to Long Island to drink because it was 18 and dying. They thought it was a great idea, which I totally agreed with, to roll it back to 18 the year I turned 18. So by the time I was 18, I was assisting as a full-time bartender for this company that I worked for. And after each shift, you can have 2 free drinks and a meal. And you all know it only takes one. And I was off and running. So I'm a blackout drinker. Actually, the first time I drank with my friend Armando, I had like a brownout. I remember seeing my brother and a couple of his friends uptown. And, you know. But, you know, I don't know. I just never thought that I had a problem, and it just baffles me when looking back on, you know, what my behavior was like and how many of my friends came up to me and said, you know, in the beginning with blackouts, guys were like, dude, you should have seen what you did, man. It was crazy. And then you did this, and then you did that. It was nuts. And everyone's like laughing. I was like, yeah. You know, and it was really cool to be crazy. And he left, dude, it's crazy. See him driving, he does all this crazy stuff. And then it was like, dude, you know, and we were over at Jennifer's house, and you were like, dude, that was... And then I was like, man, I don't know. People wouldn't drive with me anymore. They'll say, yeah, well, I think there's a party over here. And, they, you know, we'll meet you over there. But always had, you know, I always had a road dog, one good buddy, always ran with me. And John and I were running together since ninth grade. And we had graduated high school, and we were going on to the community college in our area, which, you know, is the higher scholastic colleges. You know, you cannot just roll in there just with a 2.0 GPA. But, you know, it was summertime. We were looking forward to having, like, this great summer. High school was over, and we were going to get down to some real living. And we wound up going to this bar in the country out there. It was about 45 minutes to an hour from where we grew up. And on the way back, he was driving very fast. He was just like me. He lost control and wound up going off the road, and he was killed. And I was hurt pretty badly, and I wound up in the hospital for about a week to 10 days. And it's just a miracle that I just didn't die in that car. We were going well over 100 miles an hour. And the doctor said to me, you know, you've had a severe skull fracture, you can't drink. I said, like, for how long? He said, you can't drink for 30 days. So I did that. I went for the 30 days, and then I remember the 31st day, I had a beer. And it was all right. But I through that experience, although there was recovery in our home, I never really went for help. I didn't go and see anyone and talk to him about what had happened. And it was this traumatic thing. And, you know, what happened at that time in my life is all of a sudden I just got into, like, a lot of self-pity and just a lot of, you know, I'd be out with my friends and all of a sudden I'd just punch my friend in the side of the head just for nothing. I was getting really erratic and just really going crazy. And, you know, I'd come out of blackouts on John's grave. And, you know, I was going to, you know, winding up in places that were a lot darker than normally I would go to. You know, I'm a bar drinker. I like the bars. I like the darts. You know, I like the stories. I like talking to the old guy at the bar. Tells me all these stories. I love that stuff. And, you know, I was going into, like, darker places. And I was taking more chances, you know, with my life. I really didn't care if I lived or died. I was really, like, when that happened, like, a part of me died too. But at this time, my brother Tim wound up getting sober. And he, you know, he was the worst out of all three of us. And I just watched his life change. You know, I figured, you know, you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't know, I'm more, when I first came to AA, I was like, now I'm in AA. Now I'm going to get, like, the real cool place. I'm going to meet, like, her and get, like, the real good job. Because the drinking, I'm not drinking anymore. So you know all that's going to happen. That was, like, my motive, as attraction rather than promotion. You know, and that's what attracted me, because I watched my brother. And that's exactly what happened to him. He got a good job. He had a beautiful girlfriend. He had this real nice apartment. And he was the one that struggled with that all the time. And after a while, it was probably about 8 months after I was in the accident, I wound up hitting a pedestrian. And 2 weeks after that, that man passed away. And, you know, I can't begin to tell you just how I was just walking around just like numb. And I couldn't drink enough. And for the last year of my drinking, or maybe even longer, I would just like come to and I would just say, dude, we just got to stop this. You know, and I was, first of all, I just didn't even want to live anymore. I was trying to think of a way to, like, take my own life where it didn't look like I did. You know, but you can't fool the big man up there. And I grew up in the Catholic religion and, you know, that whole deal. But for the life of me, I'd be in New York City in the worst neighborhood screaming, you know, ethnic profanity. Just, you know, someone just shoot me. And, you know, I had a really nice gal at the time, and she was real patient with me. She was with me right up until she couldn't take it anymore. And when she went away, you know, I really didn't have much to live for, I thought. But I thought, you know, but on the outside, I was telling everybody, it's good now, I'm single, I can do what I want, I don't have that, you know, whatever. But inside, I was just dying. And I was like crying in my beer. So I wound up, I got in another car wreck. And I wound up in that same hospital, the same doctor. And I had hit a parked car, and I couldn't tell you where I was for like 3-4 hours. I was telling Danny on the way here, I walked into this bar, and my oldest brother John was there, and I walked in, he turned right around, and he walked out. He didn't say, hey, little bro, what's going on? I saw him, he saw me, he just walked away. And I was like, whatever, who needs him? And, you know, as a result, I wound up back in that hospital, and the doctor looked at me, and he said, you know what, man, I think the next time I see you, I'm going to be pulling a sheet over your head. And I just was like, I don't even care. I didn't even care. First time I was in that hospital, they needed a whole other room for all the flowers and all the attention and all my friends, you know, and it was constant. People were coming. Oh, my God, I was in the big wreck. And this time, nobody. Not one call. No one. Not even the gal that I was with. She didn't even call. And I was in a room with a guy. He was probably in his late 60s, early 70s. And he was fighting to live one more day. And I was 19, and I could have cared if I lived or died. I wanted to die so bad. My parents came in that room one morning, and I had no job, no car, no room. You know, I didn't have any means of support. And they said, you know, if you're going to come back and stay with us, you're going to have to do something about your problem. And I said, like, what problem? I mean, if only she wouldn't have left and I wouldn't have gotten all these wrecks and the cops would leave me alone. I mean, still today, you know, when people say, well, what's your part in that, Bob? I go, well, it takes me a little while. I don't know about you guys, but it's just not something that comes normal for me. Like, oh, I can tell you what my part is right off the bat. No, I'm always blaming, you know. It comes more natural for me to blame than it does for me to accept responsibility and, you know, have accountability. That's why I have a sponsor. That's why I have friends who say, you know what, dude, are you all right? You know, and we talk. But the guys I was running with prior to coming to AA, they never said, hey, Bob, what's your part in this? I wouldn't have been running with them very long. You know, everything was, here, take this, screw her, screw that, who needs this, who needs that, screw them. That's how I dealt with everything. Take this. Drink that. You know, and here I am. I wound up agreeing to go to a meeting. My dad took me to a meeting. My first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my dad had been probably sober now for almost 10 years. I never even knew what AA was. I'm sure, you know, he talked to me about certain things. I remember one time he said to me, you know, why don't you just drink, like he said, near beer? If you really like the taste, you know, he said, and I was just like, are you kidding me, man? I know you like to go and hang out with your friends. Just do that. But, you know, he tried. He took me to my first meeting, and I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was unbelievable. You know, it was a room like this, and the guy was up there talking, and he was talking about, he was a real mechanical guy, and this guy built like compartments in his wheel wells where he stashed bottles, and he ran the line from the windshield washer fluid through the dash so he could put it in his mouth and press the button and go, nee, 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 nee. He'd like make drinks and put ice in there. I was like, this is cool. You know, I was learning how to be a real good alcoholic in AA, man. You know, and 2 days after that, I wound up in this facility where, you know, by the fourth day, I had taken all the steps. Oh, I just do that. That's how I live, you know, and play a lot of ping pong. But, you know, there was a lot that I learned there, a lot that went on there. You know, in my first 90 days of recovery, actually the first time I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't stay sober for 90 days. But I've learned that in the first 90 days of my recovery, what kept me sober in the first 90 days the last time keeps me sober. Yeah, there's a lot that I've learned along the way. But I can share this one incredible story that happened to me. You know, we're in the group there, and the counselor says, we're talking about asking for help, which is something that's very hard for people like us to do. He put a pencil on the floor, and he said to the guy next to me, pick the pencil up without using your hands or your feet. So the guy was going to get down there and trick it up with his teeth. He said, hey, Jim, why don't you just ask someone to help you pick up the pencil? And I'm like, oh, come on. What is this crap? You know? But years later, it's like 7 years ago, my son Connor is struggling in school. And he actually there was a kind of like a IP board. There were like seven teachers there. There were about five teachers and two like people overseeing what was going on. And Connor was not in the room. And this one, you know, I'm just a rebellious kid. You know, the teachers, the cops, all that stuff. Although I'm better now. But, you know, this math teacher said to me, all your son needs to do is he needs to learn to ask for help. And I said, well, you know, it's not very easy to do. And he said, well, for some of us, it's not. And I said, you have a pencil? He goes, yes, I do. Put it on the table. I said, I want you to pick that pencil up without using your hands or your feet. And he said, well, I'm not going to pick it up with my teeth. I said, why don't you just ask someone to help you? It was awesome. The guy was like, I don't think it helped my kid in his classroom. But I never knew while I was sitting in that group that I'd be able to use this like 20 years later. It just came to me. I couldn't wait to call my sponsor, you know. Oh, you're not going to believe this was great. Because if you know my sponsor, he's kind of a rebel, you know. But it was awesome. I remember all the other teachers going like, oh, man, I'm glad you didn't ask me to pick up the pencil. You know, but as a result, you know, I wound up going through that facility, and I came into meetings, and I was the guy that got out of that facility going to get all my buddies, and I had the big book, and I was going into the bar, going, guys, check this out. This is great. It was like Mr. Amway, you know. And they're like, oh, no, here he comes, dude. You know, I'd be in a meeting, and after the meeting, I'd go to the bar. I'll have a Diet Coke. And then it was just a matter of time where I just said, you know, he said, hey, dude, we're going to go smoke some weed. I go, oh, I'll just go hang with you guys. And then, you know, I did exactly what they were doing, but it was weed. I was like, hey, I'm not drinking. But it was bothering me because I knew it was mind altering. And right before I was to take a 90-day chip, that probably happened 2-3 weeks prior, I told my sponsor. And I thought he's still going to give me the chip, man. And he said, oh, you got to start over. I said, what do you mean I got to start over? He goes, you got to change your date. I said, oh, man. I went and drank. I said, if I'm changing the date, I'm drinking. I ain't changing no date over just smoking some weed. And let me tell you, man, after you have a little bit of recovery and you go back into my, at least when I went back into my old life, and I rolled back into that scene, it was awful. It was unbelievably painful. And I hadn't even gotten any trouble. Just the torture that I went through in my mind. And then, you know, I had to like come out and make sure no one from AA was around. You know, they're in the trees, these people. Yeah. You go to the store and they say, hey, Bob. Hey, well, I'm good. Oh, no, I'm coming up on you. I'm going to get the chip. And I couldn't drink enough. And I wound up, I got in a head-on collision in the Holland Tunnel. Actually, it wasn't head-on. It was just the left front of my car. You know, I didn't know there's one way go in and one way of coming out. Okay, and there's two lanes in and two lanes out. But at midnight, they close one side. and they clean it and they change it to two lanes. I didn't know that. So we were coming back and I was hammered and it was all backed up. So I just went in the other lane. And it ran into a garbage truck. Now, I was living at home. So how do I explain that to my dad? You know, how do I explain that to my mom? I don't know about you guys, but I don't normally get into wrecks like that going home from a meeting. I really haven't found it necessary to crash my car in a long, long time. And I remember watching my father. He's going out to work, and I park like in front of the next house. And I watched him. He's walking, and he just stopped. And he looked. And I knew he was saying, I wonder why he parked the car there. I just went, oh, I'm done. And he just opened the door, and he said, you know, you better call your sponsor, dude, because you're not going to be living here and living like that. Yeah. Oh. So I got back involved. And, you know, when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I really thought that I had done some work. And I really hadn't done much at all. I gotten involved in some fellowship. And, you know, I pick things up pretty quick. So I can go to a meeting and I can hear this guy talk just real good stuff. And people go, man, that's a great thing to say. And I just pick up on that and pick up on this. And, you know, I just get a whole like mixture of what everyone else is saying and I make it mine. And I can sound real good. I raise my hand and say, oh, yeah, and talk about gratitude and I'm so grateful and, you know, leave the meeting. And I was living just like I was in AA prior to coming here. You know, I was lying totally about who I was, which I did on a daily basis prior to coming into AA. You know, if I was in a Western bar, I was a cowboy, you know, depending on where I was is who I was. I was always lying to girls about, oh, I'm an attorney or I do this or I'm an engineer or I'm, you know, whatever. It just told me that I really didn't like who I was. I didn't want to be who I was. And to come in here and be offered a solution to really become the man that I wanted to be, that God wants me to be, and to do the same thing out there in here, what's the end result? I wound up picking up again. So to me, if I don't pick up the tools, if I don't get busy with a sponsor and get involved in the big book, work the steps, you know, I'm not going to get any relief. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm all about relief. And if I get to a certain point in my recovery to where I can't stand it anymore, I can't stand me anymore, but then I come here, I go, hey, what's up? Hey, it's all good. And then halfway home, that knot's bigger in my gut. It's only a matter of time, man, where either I'm going to take something or drink something to make that go away. So I wound up getting busy, and I put together, it's probably a little over 3 years, and at this time my brother Tim, who was so vitally important to getting me into recovery, was living in New York City, right off of Bleecker Street there, and he was pursuing his dream. He was pursuing an acting career, and he was a singer, and he was in a little off-Broadway show on 44th Street, and you know, my solution to my disease, it's not her, it's not the car, it's not where I live, it's not external, it's internal, it's spiritual. My solution is spiritual today. What I came in here looking for, thinking that was going to fix me, if I make that, you know, my priority, I am doomed. You know, most of us come in here and wind up with that anyway, because if you're like me, I overachieve. Okay? But it doesn't really matter. What happened to my brother was, that's what happened to him. He was going for the external. He neglected the internal. And he took his own life. He took his own life. It was 28 years ago, a week before Christmas. And he just knew, I guess, instinctively that, you know, I wish he drank. And I wish he drank. But you know, this disease, left untreated, has the power to kill. And I've lived that. What I had done prior to that is I knew my brother was in trouble and I was going to meetings and I was sharing. I was saying, you know, I want to get some friends of mine, you know, I want to go in there. Because we used to go there almost every weekend. There was the old Electric Circus. It's in the Lower East Side. They turned it into the Sober Living deal. It was awesome. People would come in from New England. And, you know, there are people from the city. And I was going to lots of meetings there. And I was spending more time in New York. And we'd go to this club. And we'd go to the Village and have espressos. And, you know, I was doing more in my recovery. I'm the guy who sat on the bar going, oh, yeah, we're going to we're going skiing. We're going to go do this. I never went anywhere. I never went to the beach. I never did anything. I was just sat on that stool and talked about what it is that we were going to do. Now that I was involved in recovery, we were doing stuff. I was going to young people's conferences in Rhode Island. We were going to the city. I was learning how to do all this new stuff. It was like a whole new life, just like it says. And people said to me, you know, in the meeting, we can't play God. He's got his own journey, which I believe today. But man, when that came down, it says resentment's the number one offender. And I had a huge resentment against God and AA. Because if I didn't listen to what was going on in that room, man, I did go in there with my friends, maybe my brother would be alive. And what is this God that they talk about in here, this loving God? Now he's going to deal us his hand. And little by little, it got darker and darker for me. It took about 7 months and I picked up. And it was 10 times worse than the first time. And what, you know, if you're in here and you're on your way out, there's always someone to go with you. And then you can just watch it. And this guy and I, we just buddied up. He was on his way out, and so was I. We drove all the way to New York State so I wouldn't run into anybody from AA. It's like a 6-hour drive, you know. And I remember being at the bar and just going, I can't believe I'm doing this. But halfway, I said, I got to make a call. And I called this guy. His name was Joe Moore. He was my dad's friend. And he was like a spiritual advisor. He was like his second dad, but he wasn't my sponsor. And I got his machine. I just went, see, that was it. And I just remember, I was just going, I can't believe I'm doing this, man. This is crazy. And, you know, it just got really bad. But no one ever knew. I never told my parents. I didn't come back. And, you know, when guys go out and they come back and say, hey, man, you know, and they, I just admire that. You know, I'm the guy that, you know, I don't go call my sponsor and say, hey, dude, you know, I've decided not to go to AA anymore. You know I've decided because I don't answer the phone. You don't see me anymore. Although this time, I couldn't do that because I didn't want anyone to find out. And I didn't want, my justification was, my parents just lost a son. How could I do that to them? So I'm not going to say anything. It was all ego, is what it was. And about 4, 5, 6 months after that, there was, you know, it was periodic. I'd go like 3, 4 weeks and we'd drive somewhere else. And I just went to my parents one day because I knew sooner or later someone was going to see me. And I said, you know, I just can't stay here anymore. I've decided to move to California. And they said, okay, you know, we really would miss you. But if I said to them, you know, I've got 3 days sober and I've decided to go to California, they would say, I don't think so. Or you can do whatever you want. I was 21, 22 at the time. But everyone in the program, you know, there was all support and encouragement. My parents even helped me a little financially. And it took us like 2 weeks to get to California driving here. I mean, we were drunk. All, you know, every step of the way. We stayed in Denver for like 3, 4 days. I never thought we'd get out of there. And you know, I wound up, bless you, I wound up lasting about 2-3 weeks out here drinking. And I met this gal at this bar. She was really nice. And, you know, she probably thought I was a nice guy too. And, you know, we were dating and I came out of a blackout. I just smashed some of her furniture. What a catch, huh? I don't look like that, actually. But, you know, I wound up staying there through the night because I was hammered. And the last time I saw her, the last thing she said to me was, go to that AA place you were talking about. Because when you're drinking, You've had some recovery?
Yeah,
it just stays in your head. And I don't know what I was saying. I was probably saying, oh my God, I don't want to go down. You know. So I did. I went to the Newport Club. I met a guy there. He opened up the club. He managed the club. His name was Brian. It was a Friday, and they had a men's meeting. And at the time, I was living in Irvine. The guy that I drove to New York State with, we came all the way out here together. And it was a good experience for me. I learned a lot from that. I learned a lot from him, you know, business-wise and stuff. He taught me a lot. But he never did get sober. Although, I don't know now. I haven't really had much contact with him. I talked to him about 4 months ago. He was stuck in New Jersey, and he asked me to send him $100. I said, sorry, dude. You know, you're going to have to find your way out of that one. But anyway, I remember going to this meeting, and it was a men's meeting, and it was awesome. And I just was like, oh, thank God, I'm back into this again. And there was a gentleman by the name of Tom Akins. He's no longer alive. And he said to me, I'm taking you with me. He was from, I think he was from Texas. And he was in the car business, but he was working as a salesman doing this other deal. And he took me with him the whole day. He said, you're coming with me. And, you know, he never wound up being my sponsor, but he wound up being kind of like Joe Moore was. And I wound up getting a sponsor, and I got back involved and started going to meetings, started working more steps, getting involved, taking commitments. You know, I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. I work with other men in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm in the program. I'm in service. We have a retreat coming up the first weekend of October, and I'm on the committee, and I help book the speakers, and it's cool because we have speakers coming from out of state, and I get to talk to them and meet them before they get here and learn about them. And then when they get here, I feel like I'm like a little bit more special than the rest of them because we know each other, you know. Can't wait to meet you, man. I'm like, right on, you know. And then, hey, you're Bob, yeah. You know, it's like the connection or something. But you know, I wound up, after I was sober a year, I met my wife. She was sober 2 years at the time. We met at the Saturday Night Hogue meeting, the speaker meeting. You know, I didn't even go there looking this time. I just was with my friends, and she turned around, and she smiled, and I was like, dang. Who is that? My buddy said, oh, dude, you don't want to go near her. I said, oh, yes, I do. Especially now that he said that. It's like Betsy said, don't forget to wear a tie. Now, I plan on wearing a tie, but as soon as she said that, I was like, I'm not wearing no tie. It just comes natural, you know? But, we've been married now a little over 25 years. We have 3 children. I have a son who's 24. He's got, I think, 5 months now. A daughter who's 22, who's practicing. We were talking earlier. She just got this great job. She's working at the marijuana maintenance clinic. Oh my God. It's not what I like envision for you, Brittany. I always thought she'd be a great attorney because she was always defending her friends. And I said, you'd make a great defense attorney, or, you know, maybe like work with athletes and get them the big contracts or stuff like that. And who knows? She's still young. And, you know, she's had a little taste of sobriety. You know, she got in a little scrape there, and she had 8 months, and, you know, she came to me, and she said, you know, I don't think I'm an alcoholic, Dad. It's like the scariest thing for me to hear, because, you know, I know what's out there, and I know what I was like. I never even knew where I was. What could I say? I said, you know, have you talked to your sponsor? And she said, yeah, I'm going to talk to her. And I said, well, you know, there is a section in the book that talks about that. It talks about the type of thinking that precedes a relapse. You know, you may want to read that. But I know from experience, having a dad in Alcoholics Anonymous, anything he ever suggested to me, nah. I don't know why that is. Because he had tremendous sobriety, had gone through so much. And my mom's very active in Al-Anon to this day. You know, the service we were at today was more for her. It was her friend who lost her husband. I really didn't even know the gentleman. I was just getting ready to go meet him the day that he died, actually. And then I have a son, Connor, who's 16. He's a good kid, man. You know, he hasn't gotten into any real major trouble. He's an honest kid. He struggles a little bit in school, but he's trying real hard. And he's seen what happened with Blake and Brittany. You know, the past. My wife had 2 years when I met her. I had a year. And after 17 years of sobriety, my wife drank. And what happened was she hurt her back. So what do you think? Exactly. And I took her out. And it's taken, you know, there's been probably 4 or 5 relapses in between, you know, over the past 8 years. It's been really, really difficult. And I go to Al. Actually, I didn't raise my hand, but because I haven't gone to an Al-Anon meeting in probably 9 months, because I'm involved in a Wednesday meeting down in Escondido called the Misfits Group. I have a commitment there. I'm getting a lot out of it, but Al-Anon really helped me a lot. And there were so many of my friends, you know, there's just like this, I don't need Al-Anon. There were so many guys that, you know, at first when I was like, what am I going to go there for? But I was in so much pain because I needed to not do what it was I was doing. I thought I was helping by doing everything. Just, you know, I was doing everything, trying to make sure everything was cool. And it was falling apart. Our lives were just like it. It was a disaster. And I was dying. I didn't know what to do. So I started to go. I started to go in San Diego because, you know, the town I live in, it's kind of like here. And, you know, we're the couple in AA, and I didn't feel comfortable if I was in a meeting sharing and maybe some of her friends were there. So I was driving to San Diego, and it was really starting to help me. It's actually, I've learned so much, you know, about detachment, about what to do and what not to do, you know, not checking up, all that good stuff. Keep my mouth shut. I'm real good at that. I'm so good at it now that my wife says, "You don't communicate." I go, well, shit, anytime I say anything, you know, I mean, it's not like we don't talk, but when you go through situations like that, you know, it's very hard to get through without spiritual help. And I've definitely learned a lot from, you know, Al-Anon. But a lot of my friends are going through similar situations. I say, dude, you need to go check this out with me. They'd be like, "Ah, dude, I'm going to go to Al-Anon. That's like weak." And that's like the, you know, it's so far from true. It's just helped me out a tremendous amount. You know, and everybody in my life is alcoholic. And they don't need to be acting up in order for me to have to go. You know what I mean? I just came through having to evict a really good friend of mine who was renting a condo from me. A guy that I sponsored that would not leave and would not pay. You believe that? I thought he was my friend. You know, and it was a hard time, huh, Dan? I was really having a hard time. I wanted to hurt this guy. And, you know, I mean, that's not a principle that I hear in AA. It doesn't say, hey, if people aren't doing what it is you think you should do, hurt them. But that's what I was taught. So, you know what happens to me is I get these old ideas. They come back. But then I talk about it. And then friends of mine go, well, you know what, dude? Pray for the guy. Whatever. But it works, you know. I mean, I haven't found it necessary to do anything stupid, let alone drink over it. And trust me, it owned me for a while. You know, it took like 3 months. I had to get a lawyer and the whole deal. But, you know, I just pray that, you know, this guy, he gets sober and he's okay. Because, you know, he has a family. And I just, you know, from what I was talking about earlier of how it affects the family, it's affected ours. And left untreated, even without picking up, it can affect the family. I always haven't been like Mr., meeting goer. You know, for a while there, I coached my son's hockey team. And I remember rolling into meetings in AA, and my friends would say, "Is it your birthday?" I'd be like, "Oh, come on, man." Yeah, I was like 2-3 meetings a month. "Is it your birthday?" You know, the guy loved me enough to say that to me. Sucker. But you know, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the life that, you know, I used to lie about. You know, the guy that I used to lie about in that bar. That's who I am today. I can look people in the eye. I actually like who I am today. I don't have to lie about who I am. And, you know, on top of that, I have a relationship with a higher power. You know, not giving him enough from this podium. I probably should have talked a lot more about that, because that is vital. It's carried me through, you know, all the trials and tribulations that have gone on in my life through recovery. So, you know, if you're new, just give yourself a shot and get a sponsor and work the steps and jump in with both feet. And I want to thank you again for asking me. And that's all I got. Thanks.